Maine's Political Pulse is made possible in part by Lee Auto Malls, celebrating the return of the Common Ground Country Fair, September 23rd through 25th. Learn more at mofca.org.
This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Robbie Feinberg, filling in for Erwin Gratz, and I'm joined by our State House correspondent, Kevin Miller, and Maine Public's chief political correspondent and State House bureau chief, Steve Missler. So as we head into the fall, it sure feels like election season is heating up, and arguably the biggest race here in Maine is the campaign for governor, with former Republican Governor Paul LePage challenging the incumbent Democratic Governor Janet Mills. Kevin, I want to start with you on this one, because earlier this week you staked out a fundraiser for LePage featuring Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin. Now, this has generated a lot of headlines and pushback, and interestingly enough, that has come from both Mainers and lawmakers in Virginia, too. So what kind of rhetoric did we see around this?
Yeah, thanks, Robbie. Well, Governor Youngkin received a lot of national attention when he fended off a former Democratic governor of Virginia. And that's despite the fact that Virginia has been trending blue for well over a decade. Here in Maine, we saw Democrats criticizing Youngkin's visit because of his support for additional restrictions on abortion. But what was really striking was the response from Democrats in Virginia over their governor, you know, hobnobbing with former Governor LePage. Virginia is a much more diverse state than Maine, with a large Black population. So it's not surprising, perhaps, that Democratic leaders in Virginia really seized on some of LePage's more controversial and racially charged statements over the years when he was governor. The Virginia Democratic Party said Youngkin was going to Maine to campaign for, quote, an unhinged racist gubernatorial candidate. And one of the Democratic leaders in Virginia's legislature, Delegate Don Scott Jr., echoed that pretty incendiary rhetoric both during a call with reporters and in a speech on the floor of the Virginia House. So while Governor Youngkin's visit to Maine certainly helped LePage raise money and may have elevated Maine's gubernatorial race on the national stage a bit, it may not have helped Governor Youngkin with some of his constituents, particularly in the Black community. That said, Virginia's governors can't run for consecutive terms in office, so he doesn't have to worry about another gubernatorial election in the near future. But there is speculation that he has higher aspirations.
Yeah, Kevin, and I know you already mentioned abortion a little bit. I want to go into that a bit. So Democrats, they really use this fundraiser to hammer LePage on abortion by trying to link him to Youngkin. So explain this one to me a little bit. What is the connection that they're trying to make here?
Yeah, indeed. As I mentioned earlier, Governor Youngkin has taken a pretty conservative stance on abortion. That includes advocating for a ban on the procedure after 16 weeks and saying that he'd sign into law other restrictions if Republicans send him any additional bills. But critics are pointing out that he was much more circumspect during his gubernatorial race, and they accused him of pretty much doing everything he could to avoid talking about abortion during his campaign. But that changed, they say, when he got elected, and then the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade earlier this year. And that's exactly what Maine Democrats accused LePage and other Republicans, for that matter, of doing this year. Overturning Roe and imposing additional restrictions on abortion has really been a top priority for many Republicans for years now. LePage describes himself as pro-life, as does Republican Bruce Poliquin, who's running for his old seat in the 2nd Congressional District. But since the Supreme Court decision, they've been saying they have no plans to push for further restrictions on the procedure or to overturn Maine's nearly 30-year-old law guaranteeing women access to abortion. And Democrats and abortion rights advocates have been saying for months now that LePage and others, you know, they're not being truthful. And they predict that if voters return LePage to the Blaine House and elect Republican majorities in the House and the Senate, that they will, in fact, try to dramatically rewrite Maine's abortion laws. And Governor Youngkin's appearance in Maine kind of gave them perhaps more ammunition to make that argument, because he appears to be taking a much harder line position on abortion now that he's governor than he did as a candidate.
Yeah, so let's turn away from the fundraiser for a little bit, because there is plenty of other news out there. We are hitting the stretch run of the campaign, and it seems like beyond the issue of abortion, Democrats seem to be really trying to put the attention on LePage's past record as governor. Steve, can you talk us through what the strategy is here?
Yeah, Robbie. I mean, I think to understand what the Democrats are trying to do now, you almost have to understand what they tried to do against LePage before. in 2014, when he was running for re-election, the primary argument to unseat him was that he was a, quote, national embarrassment, a tag that they slapped on him for his array of controversial comments and behavior. They didn't focus too much on his policies, and to the extent that they did, the contrasts with their own initiatives didn't seem to really resonate with voters, who ended up awarding LePage more votes in 2014 than they did in 2010 when he was barely elected to office. Democrats seem to be taking a different tack this time. This week, they held this press event in Portland that, yeah, sure, you know, it highlighted some of LePage's utterances and his behavior, but they also made a pretty concerted effort to talk about his past policies and the ones he's foreshadowed on the campaign trail. Portland Representative Mike Brennan, who's a former mayor in the city, focused on LePage's previous efforts to cut income taxes, which is something LePage wants to do again if elected again.
The revenue sharing program is key to local municipalities in terms of reducing property tax. And what we witnessed during his time as governor is one of the biggest shifts in taxes in the state of Maine, from income tax to local property taxes.
Brennan went on to warn that this tax shift will happen if LePage is reelected. Democrats are obviously doing this with abortion, but they're folding in other issues and using them as a contrast to their own policies and also to sort of hold up Governor Janet Mills's record. They didn't do that very much in 2014, but I think they recognize that staying too focused on LePage's conduct is of limited utility in persuading voters that he's not fit for a third non-consecutive term.
And what's been the main GOP's response to this so far?
Well, they're generally staying hyper-focused on the topics they believe are most helpful to their cause this year, and that is inflation and energy prices. The Maine GOP responded to the Democrats' press event by noting that two of the participants once co-sponsored a bill that would have taxed carbon emissions, which they argue would increase fuel prices. Now, that bill was proposed 3 years ago, and it died without so much as a roll call vote, probably because Democrats realized that it was going to be used against them. But you might be asking, why highlight a bill that never went anywhere? Well, my guess is that the GOP believes that voters who are angry about current fuel prices won't care because they'll just want to punish the people in power when they go to the polls in November. The same goes for the fact that state-level politicians don't have a lot of sway in determining fuel prices. For example, one of the reasons gas prices have been falling lately is decreased demand, which has been partially attributed to lockdowns in China and the effect on its economy. That's why OPEC announced this week that it's actually cutting crude oil production to help stop the tumbling of prices that we're seeing at the pump right now. But I think Republicans are basically making a gamble, or they're making the bet that voters won't make that distinction or even know that that's what's going on. And they're going to continue to blame Democrats at all levels for the price of gas and fuel in general.
And I'll just add that the one area that governors and state lawmakers do have some control over is the state gas tax. Maine's gas tax is about 30 cents per gallon. LePage has been calling for a suspension of the gas tax, but Governor Mills has not done that. Interestingly, some of the Republicans in the legislature did not support that either, because when you suspend the gas tax, you decrease the amount of revenues that are flowing to the transportation budget. So that is one area, a very small area, where they could have some influence, but there has not been a lot of bipartisan support for suspending the gas tax in Maine.
Mm. Now, Steve, before we wrap up, I want to focus with you quickly on a U.S. Supreme Court case. This week, you reported on a brief from this group, the Conference of Chief Justices, in this major case that could actually remove state law courts' power in intervening in fights over redistricting and voting laws. I feel like this case has kind of fallen into the background amidst so much other news. Can you give us a little background on the case and the significance of this brief?
Sure. So the case stems from a congressional redistricting dispute in North Carolina, where the state's law court basically rejected gerrymandered maps proposed by the GOP-controlled legislature. State law courts are often a check on legislatures that draw electoral districts, and they also intervene in voting law restrictions if they violate state constitutions. In challenging the North Carolina law court, Republicans there are arguing that the court violated something called the independent legislature theory. That theory is an interpretation of the U.S. Constitution that basically argues that state legislatures have basically unfettered ability to decide the time and manner of federal elections. That includes drawing congressional districts and even passing voting restrictions that might violate state constitutions. This dispute is now before the U.S. Supreme Court. The Conference of Chief Justices, which comprises the highest ranking judges in all 50 states, including Maine, rejects this interpretation. And it filed a brief in the North Carolina case, essentially arguing that the elections clause in the U.S. Constitution, the same clause that anchors this independent legislature theory, does not hinder state law courts' authority to determine what state election law is, including whether it comports with state and U.S. constitutions. They're essentially arguing that law courts are a check on the state legislative branch. And that view largely aligns with a lot of legal scholars who view the independent legislature theory as a radical interpretation of the U.S. Constitution. But it's also a view that's apparently shared by some justices on the U.S. Supreme Court. And several of those justices were installed by a conservative group, the Federalist Society, that's affiliated with other organizations that have pushed this theory and that have also filed a brief in this closely watched case, which could have huge ramifications on voting laws. And I think that's why you saw this conference of judges step in, because they see this as a resting of a check that they have on the legislative branch. To the extent that it's significant in the case, unclear, but it is quite a statement that you have this organization, which again represents all the Supreme Court judges in all 50 states, coming in and saying, this is the wrong interpretation of the U.S. Constitution's elections clause. And so whether that weighs on the Supreme Court case, which will be decided sometime this fall, is unclear, but it does seem like a significant statement from the legal community or the judicial branch of the states.
And that's Steve Missler. He's Maine Public's chief political correspondent and State House bureau chief. And you also heard Kevin Miller, Maine Public's State House correspondent. Thanks for joining us for Maine's Political Pulse this week. Remember, you can head to our website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter at mainepublic.org/pulse. And you can also hear an abridged version of the Pulse podcast each Friday evening at around 5:35 on Maine Public Radio. Our music is by Rob Holt. I'm Robbie Feinberg. We'll see you next week for another edition of Maine's Political Pulse.